This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
All right, so ESPN.com did their annual three-year forecast. They did. Let me see what exactly they call it. So I'm doing. They do this every year, and it's called their NFL Future Power Rankings. All right. So projections for all 32 teams for the next three seasons. In other words, these are going to be the 1 through 32. Their stack ranking, how these teams are going to be over the next 3 years. They grade the grading system, not to go too deep in the weeds, but they grade the key aspects of a team: the roster, quarterback, drafting, the front office, and the coaching. And they're all weighted differently, but fairly equally. The roster is the big portion. That's about a third of the grade. Your quarterback, to me, is probably not enough of the grade. It's 20% of the grade. Probably should be a little more, but whatever. And then the draft, the front office, and the coaching. And they grade them, Seth, like you would grade a college course. You grade it basically on a scale of where 50 and below is an F, 60 is a D, 70 is a C, all the way up to A-plus being 100. And they grade those aspects of teams. And the people that do it are some of the ESPN experts. Jeremy Fowler, Lewis Riddick, Seth Walder, and Field Yates are their panel of experts. Not a big surprise. When I sent you this link yesterday, I said, oh, look, Seth, these are out. Scroll down to find the Texans, and scroll down and down and down some more, all the way down to number 32.
Yeah.
The Texans are 32nd on the projection for how things are going to go over the next 3 years. How valid are these? We'll get into that in just a second, but I'm sure people are curious as to what exactly they're saying about the Texans in here. The Texans' overall score is a 60.6. Barely a passing grade for the next three. They are 0.6 away from being a failing grade for the next 3 years.
Wait, no, passing is 65, isn't it?
On this, a D is 60.
Oh, they have a D. Okay, yeah, I don't know what kind of what
you wish you went to school here, right?
Lowered standards and expectations school you went to, Sean. Yeah. But in my book, it's 65 is a
small
passing
parochial
grade.
School in South Bend, Indiana.
I think that all these obviously are pretty subjective, but the most depressing thing about it for me was when I looked at the 2018 assessment for the Texans. I think it was Field Yates that says the team does finally have a coach and GM who appear to be in sync, and that gives Houston a good shot at outperforming expectations longer term. At that point, because you have to do the mental math with the Texans when you're thinking of GMs, I thought, oh, yeah, that's right. It was Brian Gain. Brian Gain and Bill O'Brien seem to be completely in lockstep.
Alignment. They said the word alignment in every interview.
Oh, they're so damn aligned. Yeah. They're so aligned. It was just incredible, the alignment between those two.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this was I want to get deeper into the 3 years ago part of this in just a second, but just to put a bow on 2021, because we don't need to do too deep a dive on why they are where they are. I think we know the reasons. But their ranking for the Texans right now in the five categories we talked about, according to these experts, overall roster, which is the overall roster minus the quarterback, they are ranked 32nd with a grade of 54.3. That is an F.
Ah.
Quarterback, they are ranked 31st with a grade of 57.8. Obviously, that assumes
Jeff Driscoll haters.
Deshaun Watson's not going to be there.
These guys, I'm sick. I'm sick of the disrespect they show Jeff Driscoll.
They show
this
our
kid can play.
Yeah. Coaching, 32nd in the league, 63.8 score. Drafting, 32nd in the league,
60.8. Do what you got to do, Sean. I mean, they haven't had a first or second round pick in seemingly a decade. There you go.
The one area of optimism, which means that they're graded something other than 32nd or 31st in the league, front office, 22nd in the league. So there is a twinkle of optimism for general manager Nick Caserio among the ESPN experts doing these grades.
Caserio, and I think the one thing you have to remember, if you're looking for signs or reasons to be optimistic or just like to have some hope, personnel executives who have come out of the Patriots have had a lot more success than head coaches who have come out of the Patriots. So, from Thomas Dimitroff, Scott Pioli had kind of a checkered record, but he's gone. You know, he's had some success with the Falcons. He wasn't necessarily a great GM with the Chiefs, obviously. But Tampa, a lot of these teams have former New England executives, personnel executives as their GMs. That's where I think there's a ray of light that Caserio could genuinely be the guy or a guy. And a lot of those guys, too, I think one thing you notice with the personnel people, there doesn't seem to be as much of a theme of those guys trying to pretend they're Bill Belichick.
Yes, yes.
You know?
Yep.
Thomas Dimitroff especially was just almost the opposite of Belichick in a lot of ways, but he also learned a lot from Belichick, you know, and he has a lot of common themes to the way he operates his business with what Belichick established both in Cleveland and in New England. So that's where I think it's a relatively educated opinion about Caserio when people say nice things about him. They've watched him operate in New England for a long time.
Yeah, so they've got the Texans rated at the bottom. Here's what I'll say, Seth, and this is not me saying that, they really are selling the Texans short. You know, just in 3 years from now, they're going to be back. I don't know where they're going to be in 3 years. It's not good right now. They have a roster full of guys who are not really foundational guys you're going to build around. They've got a bunch of one-year contract dudes and a few young players that you can feel kind of good about if they develop under this coaching staff. I'm going to make more of a comment here just about the unpredictability of the NFL in general and what that means for a team that would be rated 32nd in a three-year forecast like this. And you mentioned, Seth, that if you go back to 2018, ESPN did this exercise. They do it every year. I went back to the 2018 rankings 3 years ago to see what they were saying about the league and the Texans. The Texans were ranked 15th. In that ranking, they were rated 15th in 2018. In 2018, these experts, same group of experts largely, said that the Texans are going to be about a middle of the pack team over the next 3 years. So, okay, well, now here we are. They're the worst team in football, according to these guys. I think what's more interesting is if you go back and look at the teams that were in the top, I'll call it the top 12 in 2018, Philadelphia was number one. Philadelphia was number one
for having a 3 year outlook. The next years are going to be nothing but glory for Philadelphia.
They were number one. Now they were coming off a Super Bowl championship, so it didn't feel illogical at the time or anything. But here were the top 12: Philadelphia 1, New England 2, New England 7-9 last year, New Orleans 3, Minnesota 4, Pittsburgh 5, Atlanta, who was picking 4th in the draft and still has their quarterback, by the way. They were 6th, Rams 7th, Packers 8th, Chargers 9th, Seattle 10th. Hey, Seth, the Jacksonville Jaguars were 11th on this list. The Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, they were coming off a trip to the AFC title game. Carolina was 12th. Here's the stat that I'll give you that I think kind of illustrates how unpredictable the NFL can be and why, if you're a Texan fan, we get it, why you're maybe not all that psyched about the roster or the prospects for 2022. But the total, the overall record in 2020 for the top 12 teams in the 2018 rankings was 94-97-1. The 2020 record for the bottom 12 teams from 3 years ago, 99-92-1. So the record this past season was actually better for the bottom 12 teams from 3 years ago than it was for the top 12 teams from 3 years
ago. So now as far as... because it is a three-year projection. I would point out that the Patriots did go to two Super Bowls in this three-year window that we're talking about. So that's
details.
I would say that was pretty accurate, right? Two Super Bowls in 3 years, even if your third year is not that great, is something at least.
Yeah.
I also remember the one thing, the same thing happened with LeBron in Miami. as happened with Brady in New England. It was almost like the media and fans and people at large didn't even really acknowledge the fact that there was actually going to be a free agency for those two athletes. Like, it really wasn't until in the midst of their last seasons there that people even said, hey, you know, I mean, there is a chance this is it. And you say, no, that's not possible. So you can't ever foresee or predict those things. I think the thing with the Texans that you can't foresee or predict is who is their quarterback.
That's right.
2 and 3 years from now.
Okay.
You just flat out don't know. And that's by far the biggest variable these days.
And I'm glad you brought that up. The bottom three teams in this ranking 3 years ago, Seth, these are the bottom three, the three worst teams projected over the next 3 years, 2018, 2019, and 2020 in this ranking by these experts: Buffalo 30, Cleveland 31, Miami 32. All of them were double-digit win teams last year. Two of them were playoff teams, and Buffalo was one game away from going to a Super Bowl. Those were the three teams that were forecasted by these experts to be the worst. As you pointed out, it's subjective. These are just people's opinions on this stuff. But I do think it illustrates something about the NFL that maybe makes it unique compared to baseball and basketball, is that, to me, there's just a whole lot more variability baked into the NFL year to year than there is those other sports.
Except I almost think football in some ways feels like it's becoming basketball, where one player makes such a huge difference.
Quarterback, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in basketball, it doesn't matter which position it is necessarily. If you get one of the best players in the world on your team, then you're good to go, or you're at least going to be competitive. And with football, it's somewhat similar. If you get one of the best quarterbacks in the world, theoretically you should be all right. But we saw also that you can botch it. You can, if over the course of 2 years you keep making moves where people say, that's different.
Yeah.
Not what I would have done. Oh, okay. Well, I guess you can stretch your boundaries a little bit every single step along the way. Then, yeah, you can have a really good quarterback and also be a horrible football team.
In 2017 at the MLB trade deadline, the Astros, the players, were not happy with the front office's lack of activity, the July trade deadline. What will the reaction be with the Astros players if there's no trade deadline deal in 2021? Who will be this year's Dallas Keuchel? That's next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's go back in time to 2017, a time and place where the Astros had not yet won a World Series in their history. And it was early August 2017, and Dallas Keuchel was asked by Brian McTaggart his thoughts on the Astros not making a deal at the July 31st trade deadline. Here was former Astros pitcher Dallas Keuchel back in early August of 2017.
I'm not going to lie, disappointment is a little bit of an understatement. I feel like a bunch of teams really bolstered their rosters for the long haul and for a huge playoff push, and us just kind of staying pat was really disappointing to myself. I know a lot of the guys feel like we can win in here, and that's a pretty accurate statement, and that's why we built such a great lead. But I think when it comes down to it, it's going to be we're going to win for each other, and that's it.
Okay, so Keuchel. That was fun to listen to, Seth, because you remember he was kind of making it an us versus the man, us versus the front office. We're winning for ourselves.
Yep.
But that was it. Was interesting audio back then, and it's certainly really interesting audio now, knowing some more of the backstory between Dallas Keuchel specifically and Jeff Luhnow, that there was no love lost between those two. But that was big news at the time that Dallas Keuchel went public with dissatisfaction over the lack of activity. I think the only deal the Astros made in the July trade deadline that year was they made a deal for Francisco Liriano to be a left-handed arm out of the bullpen. We do know that a month later they would make the trade for Justin Verlander that would change everything, and they would go on to win the World Series. Do we get a similar reaction from any players, Seth, if the Astros are not active at this year's trade deadline on July 30th next week?
I'm willing to entertain it, and I'd like to handicap exactly which guys would be the ones to speak up.
But I think
that the general environment on this team and the relationship between players and managers and players in the front office is a lot different now than it was before they won their World Series. That's something that I kind of have to remind myself sometimes, even when we talk about the cheating scandal and the locker room dynamics. It's that there wasn't necessarily as much buy-in from the players at that point. The Astros hadn't genuinely done anything. You know, they had a big letdown after 2000. They made the playoffs in 2015, then have a big letdown the next year. In 2017, there was still a whole lot of healthy skepticism of the Astros' entire paradigm outside of Houston and inside of it. So I think that at that point, there was a little bit more Bud Norris in Dallas Keuchel than there would be in any of the pitchers right now. And I think that's partly why Keuchel spoke up. I think they still thought at that point, like, all right, look, at some point you got to stop being robots and you got to start thinking like a human baseball organization.
Yeah. That was the first time. The first 3 months of 2017 was the first time that this window of the organization was great. You know, they've been great now for 4 years, by and large. You know, last year, the shortened regular season was what it was. They still made it to Game 7 of the ALCS. This has undoubtedly been a great window. They know they're great. This core knows it's good. They're just success is not new to them. Success was kind of new to that group. I think, Seth, if July 30th comes and goes, I don't think anybody's talking anywhere close to the way Keuchel was. And I do want you to handicap in a second here who it would be if they were to speak up. But here's what's crazy about Keuchel speaking up back in early August of 2017 about the Astros not making a deal at the trade deadline is that they had a 16-game lead in the AL West at the trade deadline. Yeah. 16 games in late July. They had an 11.5 game lead for home field in the AL throughout the postseason that year. So this was a team that was already running away with things. And it's just funny to me, and maybe some of it was more personal with Keuchel and Luhnow than we're given credit for, right? Because we know
partly is Keuchel in general, you know, would spout off from time to time,
yeah,
including criticizing unnamed teammates.
Right.
It was 2016, I think, early on when he was talking about how some guys just weren't taking it seriously enough,
yeah,
and didn't take their job seriously enough.
Yep.
So I think that
maybe more Keuchel.
I don't know
situation.
If there's a guy quite like Keuchel. It would have been, I think, pre-contract. I would have said Lance McCullers, but I think now Lance almost. I wonder with some long-term security and with a vote of faith from the organization now. It seems like Lance has been more focused on just pitching the baseball than he ever has. We don't get the sassy Lance as much as we used to.
We don't, but I almost think a contract extension emboldens him more to speak up about things like that. You know what I mean? Like he's got his money. He's got the deal signed. What's he going to do? What are they going to do? Fire him? What are they going to do? Let him walk in free agency? You know what I mean? Like I think McCullers. I don't think anybody's speaking up the way Keuchel did, but if I had to handicap it, McCullers is at the top of my big board for sure.
I guess the other one, the most similar in personality to McCullers would be Bregman, just for his combativeness and his willingness to just say whatever's on his mind.
Yeah, you got to be healthy to bitch, in my opinion.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, in my rule book, you have to, yeah.
Had you seen, I took the stat down in case you hadn't seen it yet. Did you see the stat I put on the show prep?
No, what was it?
Let me have you do an over-under on how many total games did Dallas Keuchel pitch in the months of July. I want to say it was July and August. No, I think it was June and July of 2017 when he spoke up at the trade deadline.
Yeah, yeah.
It was in the month of June and July, he pitched a grand total of two baseball games.
I was going to say three. That's right. He was on the
two times total from okay. Between June 2nd to July 28th. That's how much time he had between starts.
Okay, but he was also an all-star that year. He was really good.
He was.
When he did
but
pitch.
He wasn't healthy.
Bregman, he wasn't healthy. You're right. You're getting me on that technicality for sure, but at least he was pitching well that year. Bregman's not been good this year. Bregman is it's not a good time for him to speak up on something like this timing-wise. What about Correa?
Correa's doing all the right things. You know, he was diplomatic when he was unhappy. Dude. He was unhappy with the offer the Astros extended him, and he was relatively diplomatic while also, you know, kind of stating his case before the season began. He's been nothing but a good soldier in that time since, except for the actually hitting baseball part over the last 33 at-bats. But other than not hitting the baseball over his last 33 at-bats, right. He's been nothing but a model citizen.
Literally not hitting the baseball. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Seth, if I'm rooting for somebody to speak up like this, it's Correa, and it's not even close. Because think of the juiciness that would add to all the free agency storylines and everything else. If it were Carlos Correa. So I'm rooting for Carlos Correa to be that guy that would speak up like that.
It would be
good for
more
us.
More drama for Carlos. He seems to, when he adds to the drama, it seems to benefit his own performance.
I'm wondering who has the most right to speak up, and it might be somebody that we haven't even named yet. It might be Ryan Presley, who has been, I think you make an argument that Presley's been the best at his job on the team this year. I don't know if he's their most valuable player, but he's in the conversation, and he's been the best at his job. Plus, he's the one guy that probably needs help more than anybody else at his position in the bullpen.
No, you know what we're doing here, Sean?
What are we doing?
We're doing exactly what James Click wants us to do. We're just acting like Michael Brantley would never say a word about anything or anybody. Brantley's the guy. If you wanted a player to spur action, that would be the case where it's kind of like when Andre Johnson spoke.
Mm.
When Andre Johnson spoke, people listened because he didn't speak all that often. But when one of your best players who's also the most professional, the most mature, and the most quiet speaks up and says something, then damn it, people listen.
Okay.
If Michael Brantley got up and demanded action, James Click would have no choice but to acquiesce and trade for Max Scherzer.
Okay, so if we want action, we want Brantley to speak up. If we want content, we want Correa to speak up. Do we agree on that? Okay.
If we want content, Correa for sure.
Yeah.
Because then other fan bases weigh in on it. The Astros are good for baseball in a lot of ways, Sean.
Yes, they're on TV all the time.
Yeah, I mean, where else? Like, for the most part, baseball's a very regional sport, and on sports radio and elsewhere, people talk about their own teams for the most part.
Yeah.
You don't go out and do, like, broad. Most people in most markets don't do broad-based MLB talk. They talk about their local teams.
Right.
In football, you do a little bit more of the entire NFL. I think the Astros are the team that, ironically, unites and ties together the entire league.
Yes.
Because everybody's got an opinion about the Astros.
That's right. They're good for business. Text message. You can text the show or call 713-572-4610. Wait, Sean and Seth host on Sports Radio 610? We got in a few of those.
We're back.
I
kind of thought about starting a rumor that maybe we'd been suspended or fired. But then I thought, that could become a self-fulfilling prophecy somehow. All of a sudden, you know, the president of our company just randomly hears, like, half of a joke about how Seth and Sean are in deep water in Houston. And then all of a sudden, there's a directive to do something about that Seth and Sean problem.
Yeah, no, we don't need that kind of smoke. All right, if you are if you're a fan of Monday Night Football, but maybe not a fan of the broadcast, you are about to get an alternative solution that I am heavily, heavily in favor of. We will tell you what it is next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so a lot of people, when the Monday Night Football seats have been opening up broadcasting-wise, everybody's proposing different names for the color analyst, and we know that ESPN eventually settled on Lewis Riddick and Brian Griese to be sort of a two-man color analyst. It's a three-man booth, them and Steve Levy. And
it ended up being just okay, acceptable.
Yeah, it was
passable.
Fine.
It was It was boring, but it wasn't a train wreck like the previous one with Booger McFarland.
Yeah, and Jason Witten, that was awful. Like the Jason Witten, yeah. Booger McFarland one was absolutely terrible. This one was fine. Like they don't get in the way. You learn a thing or two watching the game. It is what it is. You're not highly entertained by it necessarily, but whatever. To each their own. What ESPN is doing now, though, is they're giving you some alternatives, and we've seen them do this before, Seth. Probably most notably on the national championship game for college football. Where they do
right. They do the coach's film room.
That's right. They do the mega cast. So you can you can get all, they have like three or four different feeds you can get depending on what it is. You know, what you get the regular broadcast with Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit, or if you want, as Seth just pointed out, like a coach's war room with three or four coaches. They've got another feed where it's very stat heavy, that kind of thing, with all sorts of tickers and stats on it and stuff. So this is something ESPN has tried out, and they are now going to be doing it on Monday Night Football for 10 games a year with the Manning brothers, Peyton Manning and Eli Manning.
And they're doing it. This kind of answers a lot of questions about, okay, why isn't Peyton going into broadcasting? What does he want to do? And now it's starting to make sense, because the way this works is Peyton Manning's production company, which is called
Omaha
Productions. That's right. That's clever. Omaha Productions is going to be producing the show, and then ESPN is buying the show from them. So Peyton kind of pulling a LeBron here and having some control over the creative process, and probably control over his schedule, control over exactly how he's presented, maybe what he's asked to do, all of that. And it's really interesting because these alternate broadcasts that they do from the national championship game, I've always been kind of surprised that they're not more popular than they are. I enjoy them. Sometimes they get a little too structureless. Like it starts to be hard to follow the game because guys are just randomly having a conversation. And the ratings are never as good as I thought that they might be. They're a very small sliver of the overall ratings, but they've never quite had star power like Peyton Manning and Eli Manning.
No.
You know, like the 2020 version was Mike Gundy, Jeff Halfley from Boston College, Derek Mason from Vanderbilt, and then Gary Patterson. So, good respectable coaches. Mike Gundy's pretty entertaining, but not like huge stars like the Manning brothers. And then the other thing is they never had any time to really develop any rapport or develop the show at all, because it was just a one-off that ESPN probably wasn't throwing a whole lot of time and effort into. This is going to be completely separate, so this will be a couple of quarterbacks and whomever else kind of in a more conversational style chatting about the game as it goes along. This has the potential to be really, really good if they do it right. I think this could be really, really good.
You have to pick one right now, but you have to commit to watching it for all 10 games. All right? Not because we're all going to dip our toe in the water with the Manning thing just to see what it's all about, but you've got to speculate what my enjoyment level is going to be for these 10 games. You got to pick one or the other, the regular feed or the Manning feed, for the entire duration of the season that it's on. It's only going to be 10 games out of the year, but you got to pick one right now. Which one are you picking?
Oh, you're doing a hypothetical.
Hypothetical,
okay. First,
yeah.
I thought you meant, like, wait a second. Like the cable company's making me pick?
No.
All right.
No.
I would pick the Manning one, yeah. I think, because it's got more upside. I think I know what I have with Riddick and, who is it?
Brian Greasy. I'd pick it just based purely on Peyton Manning.
Sean, no, I'm having a flashback to 2019. They didn't do the coach's film room because they were trying to save Monday Night Football as best they could. So they had Booger McFarland and Jason Witten. They had that broadcast crew do the alternate broadcast for the national championship game. It was like they could not stop shoving those guys in your faces.
Oh, man.
So I will go with the Mannings. I think it'll be more entertaining. And I think you might get more insight. I think that unlike Tony Romo, I think Peyton Manning will continue to do research and study the team.
Are you saying Tony Romo doesn't put in the time?
He is phoning it in to such a huge degree now. It's really getting annoying. Like it's bothering me that people are still acting like he's calling games the same way he was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Because he's obviously not. It's just clear. It's clear that he's not. I feel like he would admit to you that he doesn't know as much about these teams as he did a couple years ago. So you know who was dead on with that was Brent Musburger. Remember, people were calling Brent Musburger a hater because in that first year he said, look, He knows these teams. He's been playing against them. He knows their tendencies. He's got all this recent information that will fade over the next couple years. Instead, people said, "Oh, old man, you're a hater. You're a has-been. You don't know what you're talking about." And lo and behold, that's a little bit what it is.
It's funny. So,
and Romo never had a Peyton Manning type work ethic. I think Peyton's going to be pretty damn prepared for these games.
I think he's going to be entertaining. I think he's going to be prepared. I guess I have so many questions about it. We're talking about the Manning brothers on an alternative feed for Monday Night Football this year. They just signed the deal yesterday, 10 games per year for each of the next 3 years to do on one of the other ESPN channels, probably ESPN2, and on the app, I would imagine you can choose it on the ESPN Plus app. I want to know, Seth, I'm curious how much Peyton specifically is making off of this, because the rumors were he had been offered a Tony Romo type deal, and Romo makes like 10, 15 million. Romo makes a lot of money from CBS.
Yeah.
I would be curious what Peyton is making off of this deal with ESPN.
Sean, there's a reason that many successful performers in the music industry want to become producers as well, because there's more stability to it, and oftentimes there's just way more money in it. Who's making more money, the movie star or the production company, or the studio? You know, the studio is making the most money.
Right.
So I think that I think there's a good chance Peyton might end up. Could he be making more than Tony Romo right now by selling this product to ESPN? I don't know if he is right now. He probably isn't. But if it's a success, he could end up making like wildly more money than Tony Romo does, just because he actually owns the whole damn shebang.
Well, he does. Now, granted, just specifically for this, it's only 10 games versus a full season. But this is where I think Peyton is probably looking at this, Seth, is the replication of it. You know, the Peyton's Places, the show that ESPN signed up with Peyton Manning to do, where he goes around the country talking to different football people. It's really good stuff. I don't know how many episodes you've watched.
I've watched a few. Yeah, it's really good.
They're very good. They're very good. Yeah. They are replicating that same blueprint, but with different sports figures. You know, with different, I think there's a, I forget who all the sports figures are, but there's a basketball player that signed up to do a Peyton's Places type thing for basketball. There's a women's basketball player. They took like about a half dozen other sports and they replicated it, and they're doing it all through Peyton's production company.
Oh, so yeah.
I could see
he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I could see where it's almost like starting a restaurant franchise. Like, hey, I started Peyton's Places and now I'm franchising it out to ESPN for basketball and baseball and all this other stuff.
I wouldn't be surprised if Peyton ends up being kind of like Roger Staubach, who, you know, a lot of you might not know, Roger Staubach's been incredibly successful in commercial real estate.
Yeah.
He's got a huge commercial real estate operation up in Dallas, you know, that extends beyond just Dallas. So, you know, Roger Staubach didn't make nearly as much money playing football as Peyton Manning did, but Peyton's got that same kind of organizational ability and leadership ability that Roger Staubach did, to where I bet he might really end up building something here. So him, Kobe was on his way to doing that with his production company too.
He was.
If, obviously that got interrupted.
Yep. Let me ask you this. Does anybody give a damn about what Eli has to say on this stuff if he hadn't won two Super Bowls?
People tell me. Now, remember, if you care about Wonderlic scores at all, and you shouldn't really. It's the IQ test that the NFL gives out. You really shouldn't. But if you do, Eli scored much higher than Peyton Manning on the Wonderlic. Yeah. Eli, at least by standardized testing, much more intelligent than Peyton Manning. So who knows? Maybe we might see. I saw a side of Romo that I didn't know really existed when he started broadcasting, and I still enjoy his broadcast.
Right.
He's just not as good as he was a couple years ago. But I think Eli might do the same thing. Eli might shock some people with his personality and his intelligence. Didn't do a bad job on Saturday Night Live.
He didn't. You're right. My request would be let Peyton bring some funny, but a lot of the analysis, and let Eli just be dopey sitting next to him.
Eli might be funnier than Peyton.
He might be.
I think Peyton might be more cornball humor, where Eli might have a little bit more of like a genuine, just like organically funny. Sometimes you're going to be laughing at him instead of with him, but a lot of times you will be laughing with him.
Getting a lot of react to this on the text page. A lot of people saying Manning feed, not close. You know, as far as who they would sign up for. Manning brothers, yes. Someone said the only name. Okay, good. I'm glad people are chiming in on this. So Peyton's Places, as I just said, Seth, Peyton has signed up, his production company has signed up with ESPN to replicate that for other sports. Someone said the only names I remember are Vince Carter for the basketball one and Big Poppy for the baseball one. Those have potential to be really, really good.
Yeah. Boy, the Big Poppy one might be outstanding. That might be an Emmy Award winner.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, has Peyton won an Emmy for the Peyton's Places yet?
I'm not sure.
You know, when I first started watching Peyton's Places, I was worried it was going to be kind of like Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. That's Jerry Seinfeld's web deal that he does where he goes out and has coffee with different comedians.
Yep.
And it's all right. I mean, but it's not anything that I get excited about watching or anything. I'm always a little bit let down by that. And maybe I'm just not that big of a Jerry Seinfeld fan. But Peyton's Places ended up being a lot better. I think it's actually funnier than the Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee one.
Wake me up, ESPN, when you get a feed that has degenerate gamblers sitting on it. That have all kinds of money.
I bet they will
the
this year. I bet they will very soon.
Been my dream for a long time to have a gamble cast where it's just me and a few friends who bet on every single prop bet, and we're just reacting to it from a gambling perspective.
Yeah, you know, Sean, you know, as I spent part of my vacation learning about sports gambling just so I can be of better service to you, my co-host, since you know so much about it. I would, now that I know a little bit about sports gambling, I know just enough to know that I don't know hardly anything at all. You know, it's probably going to be hard to balance gambling talk without getting too technical, even for an avid gambler.
Yeah.
Because like now I'm realizing, man, you really shouldn't even be thinking in terms of the actual lines. You need to be thinking in terms of break even and all that and value expected. And it gets super technical really, really fast if you know what you're doing.
It would be a very niche channel. These things are all, other than the main feed, they're all kind of niche, these
mega
casts.
But even on the niche side, it could get super nichey super fast.
Sure, sure.
The vast majority of people who think they know something about sports gambling really don't know all that much. So how technical do you get with it?
Here's where the technical part of it doesn't have to factor in. Is that you don't sit down and watch the game. If you're a hardcore gambler, you'll sit down and watch it for an extended period because they're tracking bets along with you, and there's probably an element to the production that has the actual tracking of the stats during the game, you know, the percentage chance of covering the spread, all that stuff. Where it would get entertaining is if just the casual fan knew what the spread was of a game and a game was coming down to the end, you would flip over there just to see these two idiots reacting to what for everybody else is a meaningless three-pointer at the end of the game, but it covers an 8.5-point spread, and these guys are celebrating like they just won the NBA championship. You would need some entertaining hosts on there. And you'd have to allow cursing. You would have to allow cursing on that channel.
Oh, yeah, and nothing but. Yeah, I feel like everybody should have to speak in a thick New York accent.
Even if,
I don't care if you're from Alabama, you should be speaking with a thick New York accent.
The
other thing I've learned too, Sean, is that I'm still, even though I learned a little bit more, and now I understand the money line a lot better. I'm actually, the money line appeals to me in a lot of ways more. So for the people listening that don't know what I'm talking about, that's like when you see a game listed as plus 300 or minus 110 or what have you, that's the money line. Why do we Americans insist on being so damn annoyingly, like, backwards about stuff? It doesn't have to be that complicated.
Yeah.
Like, why do the Europeans just say, like, they put it on a system where, like, oh yeah, if you bet a dollar, you'll win $1.30 back.
Yeah.
Like, the Americans make it way more complicated, which is a barrier to people getting into gambling.
It is. It might be an inability to understand the lingo. Absolutely. Hey, Seth, what about this? I just thought of this. As weed becomes more and more legal throughout the country, what if you had a feed where you just had like two or three stoners sitting and watching a game? Like you toke
like a
up
Seth
and you put,
Rogen cast
yeah you
or
toke
something?
Up and you put it on a stoner channel and you just sit there and watch the game like you're almost like that, sitting there with them stoned.
I think that's actually a really good idea.
Thank you.
You can kind of they might go off on tangents a little bit.
Yeah.
There'd be a whole lot of, you know who that would be popular with, or you know who would be popular on that channel, even though I know he's not a pot smoker, John McClane, because. Because one of McClane's favorite things is, can you imagine?
Yes,
and there's nothing stoners like to do better than sit and imagine things. Like, because then you could, like, McClane could really explore the space, you know? You're like, could you imagine? Could you just imagine if all of a sudden Russell Wilson also had a handgun as he was running down the road, just like in the last Boy Scout? Can you just imagine that?
That is the next.
And just feel free. Yeah,
the next
love it.
Chapter for John McClain, the face of the stoner feed on the Megacast. We're going to bring that up to him tomorrow when he's on with us.
By the way, now that I'm thinking about that scene from The Last Boy Scout,
yeah,
am I wrong? In my memory, I'm thinking about that scene where, spoiler alert, everybody, it's the opening scene of the movie. The running back's running through the thunderstorm on the field, and he pulls out a handgun and starts shooting defenders. Did some defenders keep trying to tackle him after that point?
I feel like now I need to go watch.
I hate to be the person that's like, well, actually, but I do think, I do think that very few people would continue trying to tackle him after he'd already shot one defender.
A bunch of tryhards, probably.
Yeah, I was like, coach is going to love me for this one. Starting D, plays at the table. Yeah.
Guns. Someone said Ricky Williams, Seth Rogen, and John McClain. It's worth giving a try to, I would say.
Ricky had stopped smoking pot for a while. Yeah. I know, obviously, he was a huge advocate for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't know where he is on that right now.
Don't either. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's do some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines. Brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, the Astros, we start there. The Astros get back on the winning track last night after losing their last two games in Chicago over the weekend and only scoring one run in the process. Not an offensive explosion last night by any means, but they win the game 4-3 against the Cleveland Indians. The offensive explosion came from the bat of Yordan Alvarez, who came into the game 0 for his last 22. He walked out of the game with a home run and a double, and the two-run home run traveled 409 feet. Dusty said it was that home run that won the game.
We needed it, and that was a difference in the game, especially you were thinking the whole game that leaving those runners out there on third, less than two outs, was gonna cost us, and it almost did.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, Seth. When they got that early run, but then they get second and third with nobody out, second and third with one out, and you're not bringing guys home. But Yordan saved the day with that two-run home run.
Yordan saved the day. Brantley and Maldonado also with RBIs. Or excuse me, not Brantley. It was Yuli. Yuli scored Brantley. Yep. The Astros struck out 11 times. They were 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position. They stranded men on third twice. So it wasn't like they've broken out of their offensive doldrums or anything. Really, in a lot of respects, this game was about the defense. And not just the pitching, just fielding. There's some really brilliant plays by Altuve,
Correa.
Yeah. Oh, I would say Greinke. Greinke almost having his ankle broken. When the runner almost stepped on his foot at first base when he went over and kind of had to put his foot on the first base awkwardly. It was a defensive performance with four runs scored.
There was a scare with Yordan a couple times in the game. The first was when he fouled a ball off the top of his foot. The top of his right foot, he was kind of crouched over for a while in pain. The trainer had to come out. He did wind up finishing the at-bat. He would later go on to hit the home run and the double in the game. So, didn't affect his swing really at all. But the second time, Seth, was on the double that was just a few inches away from being a home run. Yordan kind of came into second base, as he does from time to time. He has trouble sometimes, I think, deciding whether or not to slide, maybe avoiding sliding because of the knee surgeries that he's had. But he came into second base, didn't slide, came in kind of awkwardly, kind of the foot landed on second base awkwardly. Dusty Baker did not like that sequence at all.
When you're decelerating like that, that puts pressure on your hamstring. So it wasn't his knee. You know, he just, he had hamstring tightness. So we'll reevaluate him tomorrow.
Okay, I don't like that. I don't like the hamstring tightness with Yordan Alvarez. Not even one tiny bit. They took him down into the clubhouse after the inning was over in which he hit the double to take a look at the hamstring. He was out there celebrating with his teammates after the game was over. So it wasn't one of these things where he went in the clubhouse and then he disappeared. He went down there, they looked at it, he came back out, he was celebrating with his teammates. But of all players too, that's one I definitely don't like hearing the word hamstring involved with Yordan Alvarez.
Yordan, as I said a few weeks ago, sometimes when he's running, it feels like when a big F-250 that's lifted is driving 90 down the highway. It's a whole lot of power. It's a whole lot of speed. But if a buck jumped out in front of it or something, you don't feel like it could maneuver out of the way. That's how I feel with Yordan right now. And it is, it's a terrifying experience every time he has to do something athletic while running fast on the base path.
It's the same feeling I got. I think I brought this up before, but it's the same feeling I got the year after Jadeveon Clowney had the knee surgery. After his rookie year, 2015, every single play in which Clowney was involved, you watch it and you go, get up, get up, please get up, please get up.
You know, the difference with Clowney and Yordan is that Clowney had a certain stiffness to him where I think you're perpetually going to be worried about whether he gets injured. And obviously you should be. He's gotten injured a lot in his career. He's had some stretches of health, but he's also gotten injured a whole lot, last year included. With Clowney, there was a weird awkwardness about him. Despite being so ridiculously explosive and powerful, he was kind of like RG3 in that way. You know, RG3 just had this look when he would fall down or when he would run sometimes where it just looked like he was bound to get injured despite being so athletic and so fast. RG3, when he tried to slide as a football player, was kind of awkward. With Yordan, I really feel like it's more just about his knees. I think it's just he had the knee surgeries, double knee surgeries last year. He got healthy in time to play the season, but you can just tell by looking at him, like he's not as muscular right now as his frame would suggest he would be.
Yeah.
I think he's going to, once he gets back into a full off season of hopefully being healthy, I think he's going to be able to lift a little bit more weight, put some weight on his legs, and I'm not going to worry about it. We got to make it through these next few months is all.
Yeah. So game two of the series tonight, and it'll be Luis Garcia on the mound for the Astros tonight.
There's a nice article about Luis Garcia in The Athletic right now.
There is. I haven't read it yet. Is it good?
How rare it is for a guy to be discovered at the age Luis Garcia was in Venezuela.
Yeah. Next headline. Melvin Ingram has signed with the Steelers on a one-year deal. And I guess, Seth, I found this story interesting just because we're at that stage of free agency where there's probably still a lot of guys sitting at home that are veteran guys that may have some football left in the tank. I don't know that any of them are coming here to play necessarily, but the Steelers signing Melvin Ingram to a one-year deal at this stage of free agency, there's a nice pickup, 32 years old. I would say signing Melvin Ingram to a one-year deal was probably a better decision than paying whatever Bud Dupree got from the Tennessee Titans. So now T.J. Watt gets a little help on the other side from a veteran guy in Melvin Ingram.
Yeah, I love that Bud Dupree went to the Titans because I think that Bud Dupree was a guy that was the beneficiary in a lot of ways of the having so much talent along that defensive front. I think Bud Dupree made a lot of plays where he either had to beat a running back or he was unblocked or he was playing, you know, the protection was sliding the other direction because there's other really good players on that front seven. So I think that Bud Dupree's not going to be a game changer for the Titans and their horrendous, awful, almost as bad as the Texans defense. And likewise, the Titans still have issues in their at cornerback, really. And corner with an
corner,
end.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's a good signing for him. That's like along the lines of when some of these veteran, older pass rushers go places like Justin Houston with the Colts for a couple of years or various other guys, it's probably news alert, the Steelers defense is still going to be really good.
Yeah, yeah, you know, they're going to be awesome. Who are you picking to win the AFC South this year if you had to pick right now? Because you just made a pretty good case that the Titans are going to be abysmal defensively.
Well, yeah, but they also are still going to have an awesome offense. So the Titans, I can bank on the Titans right now.
Okay.
Another 32-team preview of the season, I saw the beat writer from the Colts almost just dismissing the notion that Carson Wentz wouldn't be really good this year. He said, Carson Wentz looks like he's settled in just fine. What the hell are you talking about?
He hasn't put on pads yet.
On what earth has Carson Wentz proven that he hasn't all of a sudden gotten the yips? Like, what the hell? The Titans will be good. It's just that they spent on the defense somewhat in the offseason, but their defense was really, really bad last year.
Yeah.
And just yeah, I think the offense will continue to be really good. They're losing Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator. That's kind of a big deal. But it's so yeah, I would pick the Titans as winning the division. I just don't know that they're going to be all that much better than they were last.
Right. Gotcha. All right. Next headline. All right, we get a little music for this one. Seth, are you excited about this? A Game of Thrones inspired experience is coming to downtown Houston. Now, you and I were not hosting together when Game of Thrones was a thing, but you were a Game of Thrones fan, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you watched Game of Thrones. Yeah.
I think we were hosting together during the final season. It's just that nobody liked the final season, so we didn't talk too much about it.
Maybe we were. Yeah. The House of Thrones, HAUS, is a 10,000 square foot, multi-level recreation of Westeros, the fictional world of the fan-favorite HBO series. The adults-only bar opens at 505 Main Street this Friday. So this Friday, yeah. So we'll have to go. It's an interactive pop-up. It features photo ops of King's Landing, the infamous Wall of the Night's Watch, and Winterfell. It also has a daily Iron Throne contest where guests can use everyday materials to build their best miniature version of the Iron Throne from Game of Thrones.
So this is sounds like it's an officially licensed outlet or something. Is this going to end up being kind of like, say, the Hard Rock Cafe?
Maybe.
Feels like it's going to kind of a corporate feel to it. Not obviously different themes and everything.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, does a pop-up mean that it's temporary, that it's not going to be there forever?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I
was about to say, I don't want to do it. I'm not going to be in town on Friday after the show. We could go next week after it dies down a little bit, but if it's a pop-up, it might be crowded.
Yeah. I don't want to go Friday either. That's what I was going to say. Maybe next week. And you tell me which. Okay. They have three different sets of activities on certain nights. You tell me which
one. Do I get to kill somebody?
I'll let you know here. You tell me. Now, these are the activities. We could go Sunday, Monday, Tuesday is game night with life-size game pieces. That feels like the one where you would most likely be able to kill somebody because those are life-size game pieces. And you could just say, well, I got swept up in the moment with these life-size game pieces and I decided to, you know, skin this person alive or feed them to a hound or whatever the case may be.
Right, cut off his junk. I mean, if there's two... There's two things that I'm hoping for. Tell me these other two things first.
Okay, so that's
I'll tell you whether they were there.
Sunday, Monday, Tuesday is game night with life-size game pieces. Wednesday or Thursday, Game of Thrones-inspired trivia with prizes.
Mm-hmm.
Friday, Saturday, Game of Thrones-inspired costume contest with prizes.
Oh, okay. None of those are as scintillating as what I was thinking that maybe, like, yeah, I mean, you think about Game of Thrones, what are the first things you think of? You think of, okay,
incest.
Dragons, fire-breathing dragons. Yes, incest. Like, can I sleep with my aunt at this establishment or not?
Right.
What's the deal here?
Thursday night.
I don't know she's my aunt, but like, we'll pretend, you know, that I don't know her. Or can I have my genitals? Can I get castrated?
Right.
You know, that's a big thing that happens on Game of Thrones. People get their genitals sliced off. Yeah. People have incest or commit incest.
Right.
And then dragons kill people.
It's a delightful show. Yeah, no doubt.
It's generally. So no, at first when you said there was going to be that, the first thing I thought of was the Hobbit Cafe, which is the
Richmond.
Opposite of a pop up. The Hobbit's been there forever on Richmond. Yeah. At least I don't know since 2002. I remember going to it when I first got to Houston.
Yeah, it's still
but
there.
That's a The Hobbit doesn't have to be officially licensed because The Hobbit is, you know, that's a royalty-free material at this point.
Yeah, it's just a noun. Book is,
yeah, well, the book's... Well, no, it's not a noun. It's just the original book is so old that the royalties have expired on
it.
The copyright would have expired on it.
I feel like I'd do pretty
good.
People
are thinking, like, yeah, what about the movie? Oh, it was a book first.
Yeah. I feel like I would do pretty good at the trivia. But I always feel that way. And then when I go to the Geeks Who Drink trivia nights... I get schooled. I'm good like the first couple stages of it, and then they start going a layer deep, and it's like, man, I didn't watch this close enough.
Yeah, you got to remember, like, Paul Gallant has watched the entire series multiple times.
Yes, he'd be a good person to bring with you on Wednesday or Thursday with the trivia. And by the way, you're listening to KILT and KILT HD2, an Odyssey station. Tickets, by the way, are $40 per person, so you got to pay to get in. $40.
I don't have to pay to get into The Hobbit. I gotta tell you right now, J.R. Tolkien is winning out over the other weird little science writer dude. What's that guy's name?
George R.R. Martin.
Yeah, George R.R. Martin.
Nothing little about him.
You know, it's J.R.R. Tolkien is the guy that wrote The Hobbit.
Yeah.
And then George R.R. Martin. What is it with these fantasy writers and their double initials in the middle?
I don't know. Idiots.
Sean P.P. Pendergast.
No, we're not going with that. All guests must be 21 or older, by the way. Food, drinks, and merchandise sold separately. So there you go. There was like a 5-minute live read for a pop-up bar inspired by Game of Thrones.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.